Welcome to Porch Stories on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Sarah Hegland. Every month, we invite residents of Central Iowa for a potluck and neighborly conversational storytelling. As we sit around the table and tell each other stories of our lives, we pass around the recording microphone so we can share them with you on the radio. So sit back, enjoy something to drink, and imagine you've joined us. The theme of this evening's show is cats. Listen to the laughter and the joy of conversational storytelling. We're your neighbors.
It was a cardboard box boiling with claws and ears and little noses. And the little girl at the church, one of my daughter's friends, was holding the box, looking at me with begging eyes. Please take a kitten. Please take a kitten. I looked them over, and yes, there they were, climbing all on top of each other. Some of them black and white, and some of them peach. And then there was one who, in all of that boiling box, seemed to be able to get on top of all the rest. And as he got on top, got pressed down again, and then scrambled himself up to the top, the other thing I noticed about him was that he was definitely the strong, silent type. Because all the other kittens were, of course, hungry, and they were, you know, meow, 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 but not Lostin. I remembered it was my daughter's birthday. And yeah, we had a pretty nice present. But I knew that if I gave her this kitten, it would be an ultimate present, especially for an 11-year-old girl. So I picked out this gray and peach tabby, this little Lostin, and I tucked the kitten under my coat and went to church. Had a very lively church service. Sitting there in the back with this little cat crawling all around my tummy. And then after the service, when my daughter got out of her Sunday school class, I called my husband over. He was a music minister at the time. And together we presented her with this kitten. And of course, it was the ultimate gift you could give an 11-year-old girl. Now, I'd grown up with dogs, not cats. I'd heard a lot about cats, and I was actually a little nervous because I did not really know how to take care of a cat. And people would laugh at me and say, "What do you mean, take care of a cat? You know, you don't. They're just independent, you know. Just fill a box over here with gravel and a little smaller box over here with food, and, you know, and they don't care about you. They'll just do their thing." But still, I understood dogs, and at that time I did have a dog who happened to have been my daughter's third when she was three. It happened to be her Christmas present. Now she was 11. The dog was older now, getting into his middle age, and his name was Sam. He was a golden retriever, and as you know, golden retrievers don't ever do anything but act like puppies until they're, you know, until they can barely move anymore. So he really wasn't a different personality to me, but he was a barker. Loved to get other dogs barking, too. He'd put his nose against the fence until the dog next door was just completely frantic and then trot away triumphantly. So that's the kind of dog he was. He was playful. And I brought home this serious, strong, silent-type kitten. And I was a little nervous about how they'd get along. I was nervous about how I could take care of this cat. I'd heard so much about the independence of cats. So all of these things about animals, you know, I had learned and heard. And I started on my many years adventure with Lostin and Sam. Lostin's name came because our last name was Founds, and my daughter thought it would be cute to call him Lostin Founds. So that's hence the name of the cat. Well, the first two or three days they avoided each other. And then one night I got out of bed, and of course Sam had taken over a corner of the bedroom, and I looked down over here, and there was Sam in his usual position, and there was Lostin sleeping right on top of his paws. This little kitten curled up there. And I thought, okay, they're going to get along, obviously. He's letting the cat sleep on his paws. And as the years go by, you know, 2 or 3 years go by, I'm getting out of bed and still seeing that. I'm really quite amazed because, of course, the cat is going from just being able to rest curled up sweetly on top of the dog's paws to being, you know, pressed against the dog's side under his chin and, you know, molded to the dog, you know, sleeping. And all this time, I only heard a few meows from Lawston. I heard plenty of barks from Sam because Lawston had immediately taken on the task of getting Sam in line. So at moments when Sam would get a little aggressive, there would be a pop, you know. So Sam learned, you know, to respect and see Lawston as a little bit of the little bit in position of the pack, a little bit over him. And he was so grateful that they had different food and different places to defecate and that sort of thing. So the years went by, and Lawston and Sam were kind of a little pair there. And as Sam got older, he started to get a little arthritis, and we thought it was arthritis. So I would take him for regular shots. And then one day, Sam didn't eat his food. So I, you know, switched his food and that sort of thing. I talked to the vet, got some advice. And then the next day, Sam did not eat his food. And I started to get worried because it's 2 days without eating food. What can I do? And the hard part about it was Sam jumping around the yard, happy as can be, barking away. And Lawston usually would sit on his haunches and kind of look strangely at Sam, like, what is all this fuss about? What is wrong with you? So one day in the afternoon, or the third day, I came home. Sam still hadn't eaten his food. I came home from work. And so I called my husband at his work, and I said, you really need to take Sam in. There's something going on, something wrong with the dog. So my husband came home, and he picked up the dog, and he took him with him. And the day kind of went on as usual, and I thought probably Sam will have some medicine and he'll poop all over the yard and then he'll start eating again. And time went by and time went by. And this was in the summertime when the sun was still quite bright in the sky around 5 and 6 in the afternoon. All of a sudden I heard a sound. The sound came from the front room. And it was a sound I had never heard in my entire life. And it was this kind of a yell. And I ran into the room. My first thought was that the cat was on fire. Something horrible had happened, you know. And I ran into the room, and there was Lawston on top of a Queen Anne chair, looking out the window and yowling in one long yowl, just like I had described before. And then, when he stopped, he jumped onto the cushion and under the chair. And for an hour or two, I could not get the cat to come out from under the chair. I was very confused. So finally, I called my husband at his work. He was still working around 7 or so. And I said, what happened at the vet? Because he hadn't brought the dog back. I figured probably the dog's going to stay overnight for observation. And he said, well, he said, the vet told me that the dog has a nerve disease that golden retrievers often get, and the nerve disease has gone into his stomach, and he cannot digest food anymore. And basically, he only has a few weeks, and then he'll die, because there's nothing we can do about this nerve disease. So what I told the doctor was to go ahead and put the dog down. This was about 3 in the afternoon. When he had taken the dog, so I thought, I couldn't figure out what happened. And finally I said, well, what time did the doctor put the dog down? And he said, well, the doctor said that she was in surgery, so she couldn't put the dog down till 5 o'clock. So then I kind of understood that this very strong, silent type of cat who had mastered this dog with his paws and had shown such independence, had felt the loss of this dog at the crucial moment, had reached across to this dog. And that is the wonder of animals to me, that they reveal this part of themselves, this emotional part of themselves that we often overlook and don't quite attribute to them. And to this day, I remember that revealed tenderness of that cat, and it has meant a lot to me. Thank you.
Smelling a rat.
Were you there when the pharaohs commissioned the Sphinx?
If you were and you are, you're a Jellicle cat. Jellicle stands for 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 Jellicle cat. We can dive through the air like a flying trapeze. We can turn double somersaults.
Those people that when I walk into a room, if there's a cat there, the cat immediately tries to come over to me and makes me extremely nervous and hisses at me and whatever. And there's a reason for this. It's a pretty good reason too. When I grew up on a farm in eastern South Dakota, and most farms had feral cats to keep the rodent population down. And ours was a pretty typical farm. My dad milked 35 Holstein cattle, and I was the youngest of three children, and we had our chores to do. We helped bring the cows in for milking from the pasture, and we'd put feed in front of the stanchions, and we had to feed the pigs and the chickens and the sheep and, you know, just the typical farm kid chores. But, you know, things were kind of different back then, too, because if we weren't doing our chores, we pretty much had the run of the place. Seemed like there weren't always a lot of adults around. And on this particular spring day, it seemed like I was the only one around. I think my brother and sister had probably ditched me, which they often did, me being the youngest one. And so I went in and I got my baby Ruthie doll, and I brought out her bed and her blankets and her clothes and the doll carriage that my sister and I shared, and I was just going to have a nice day playing house on the front steps. Well, it was really boring, and so I just kind of left my doll stuff on the steps and started walking around the farm and ended up in the barn. Now, nobody was in there. The calves had been let out with their mothers. They were old enough to be out in the pasture, and my dad wasn't out there. So I decided to climb the ladder to the hay loft. And I got up there, and the hay bales were just stacked in these wonderful little sort of buildings, a city of bales up there. And I was climbing over them and going up and down and, you know, really getting a good workout. And I got to sort of the back of the barn, and I thought I heard something, and I stopped, but really just heard my breath. I was out of breath from all the climbing and my heart beating, and so I kept going. But when I came to that area again, I heard this little mew, mew. I thought, oh my gosh, there's kittens in here. Now, we had been warned not only about kittens, about any baby animals on the farm. Mother pigs will charge you and bite you. Mother horses will kick you, mother hens will peck at you, and mother cats, of course, will scratch you. And we were always warned, leave the babies to their mother. So I kept playing. I thought, I'm not going to get involved with, you know I shouldn't be with the kittens. Well, every time I came to that area, I'd hear more and more mew, mew. So finally, I climbed up on top of that stack of bales, and here in between two bales were the most adorable little kittens. And they were sort of waving at me, sort of beckoning me, you know, to come over. So I sat and watched them for a while, and, you know, I couldn't help but notice that their size was so similar to my baby Ruthie's. And all I could start to imagine was these dolls dressed in my baby Ruthie drinking wet doll clothes. And I finally thought, you know what? I'm going to take those kittens, and I'm going to play with them. So I went and I looked out the door of the hayloft, could see the whole farmyard, no cats in sight. And I climbed halfway down the ladder, and I looked at the lower level of the barn, no cats in sight. So I got those cats, and they were very, very flexible, very soft, very squishy, and I could get them right under my left arm so I could climb down the ladder. And I got them to the front steps. Well, these little things were trying to climb all over the place, so I had to wrap them in a blanket and put them in the baby basket. And I had decided that the blue silk dress would look best on the gray and white kitten, and the little yellow calico diaper set with the bonnet, shirt, and diapers would look best on the white cat. And they just kept climbing all around, so I wrapped him in a blanket and put him in the baby buggy. And I took the first cat out, the white cat out, and I started getting her dressed. And luckily, those little limbs were really flexible. They just flip right in there, but this cat would shake her head and the bonnet would go off, and it was a difficult thing, and I began to appreciate, you know, how difficult it was to parent and keep these kids in order. Well, while I was dressing this cat, the other one kept jumping out of the baby buggy, so I picked up the baby bed and stuffed it in the baby buggy on top of the cat and stuffed baby Ruthie along the side. Now, the cat was fine. I could hear it meowing the whole time, so I was not worried about its safety. And I worked hard, and I got the shirt and the bonnet on the cat, and I was just laying it on its back to diaper it when I saw something in the, you know, the side of my vision, and I looked, and oh my God, there was the mother cat, and she'd grown about 10 times in size, and she was just like, Now, I don't really remember what happened, but I just have had nightmares, and I think the nightmares probably bring up those recessed memories where, you know, there was hissing and screaming and me saying, sorry, take your kitten, and I got a really bad scratch on my left arm and my right leg, and I don't know what happened, but the mama cat got that bonnet off the baby, but she just took it with the shirt all the way out to the barn. I was a little bit worried. I knew I had to get that next cat out because I knew she would be back. And I was also worried about my injuries. So I picked up the baby bonnet and I was dabbing the blood off of my arm because I didn't want to get it on the baby buggy because honestly, it wasn't a shared baby buggy. It was my sister's baby buggy. And I knew she'd be upset. So I'm trying to work with this injured arm and pull this bed out. And, you know, I'm watching the barn and I'm working and crying. And it was a mess. Well, the mother cat starts galloping, and I mean, I don't know, we used to watch Mutual of Omaha Wild Kingdom, and they'd show those cougars, like, just tearing off through the Serengeti. Well, that was the mother cat, you know. She had reached back to those primordial instincts, and she was rushing toward her baby. Well, finally, I flipped the bed out of the baby buggy, and I got the cat, and, you know, I'm just going to toss it, well, maybe lob it a little bit. You know, I don't want the mother cat getting close to me. So I pick it up, and just as I get my hand up in the air, that cat jumps and goes that way. So now I am smack in the middle of the kitten and the mother cat. And, of course, I know there's going to be trouble again. And, you know, I had been to school. I was in first grade, and we had learned how to protect ourselves in case of a nuclear bomb. So I assumed the position. You know, I squatted, covered my head, and hoped that the mother cat, you know, would appreciate that. Well, nothing happened, and then I saw her go in front of me, and she grabbed her cat by the scruff of the neck. Luckily, I had not gotten that cat dressed, so, you know, I wasn't going to lose another baby outfit. But the mother came over, and I'm standing on the porch, and the mother dropped her kitten in front of me and arched her back and just went for what seemed like, I don't know, like a minute. She could hold her breath and hiss forever. And then she picked up her cat, her kitten, and she just saunters back to the barn. And about every 10 feet, she sort of swings that cat back in her mouth that's dangling, looks at me, arches her back, and takes a few more steps. Looks at me just like, I'm watching you. I got you. I'm watching you. Well, there was a lot of fallout over this whole thing because, well, they found out I had been playing with baby animals, which was, like, against the rules. And not only did I get a little blood on the baby bonnet, I flat out ripped that baby carriage to shreds. And anyway, all that stuff is sort of inconsequential to what the real consequence was of that day, and that is that every cat on the planet of this earth now has imprinted on their DNA what I did to those kittens. And so payback, you know, I'm just expecting payback until I die here, this life on earth, you know. And so when cats see me from across the room, they, like, arch their back. And they recognize me as the person who put tiny kittens in, you know, drinking wet doll clothes and lobbed them through the air and wet my pants during a fight with the mother cat. And to this day, they hiss at me still. I give cats a wide berth. You know, I respect cats. I do. I've never owned a cat as a pet. But anyway, that is our show for tonight. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us around the table for Porch Stories, where we have just heard stories from your neighbors, Karan Benton Found and Lori Allen. The music you heard today was Jellicle Songs for Jellicle Cats from the musical Cats, and Home Sweet Home by the Bray Brothers. Porch Stories is a production of KHOI Radio and is broadcast Wednesday evenings at 9:30. These stories come from regular events held every month, and everyone is welcome to attend and share your stories. Thanks to our production crew for this episode, Karan Benton Founds, Rick Morrison, Deborah Bunka, Ursula Rudenberg, and me, Sarah Hegland. Porch Stories is made possible by a generous grant from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. KHOI is building a community through communication. If you would like to tell a story, email khoiradio@gmail.com or phone 515-292-2878. See you next week.